I will do the call to order. The time is 9:31 a.m. on April 25th, 2025, and I call the meeting of the Committee on Behavior Analysts to order. The meeting is being hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on the agenda have been properly noticed of this fact and have been supplied with the meeting access instructions. So for roll call, Ms. Michelson, would you please call the roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Byra?
Present.
Ms. Denton?
Present.
Dr. Reitz?
Present.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Present.
For the record, Dr. Davey is absent. We do have a quorum today and may proceed.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. As a reminder to board staff, please activate the transcript recording feature of this meeting for the purposes of drafting meeting minutes. All right. So before we get started, just a couple remarks here. Thank you very much to board staff for all that you do to get us to this point. Thank you to my fellow committee members who are volunteering their time to not only review complaints, but also all of the applications. Thank you for applicants that I see who are joining in on this call. It makes our job easier when we can ask you questions if needed. And to the applicants who have filled out their applications in their entirety or have responded quickly to board staff when there's been issues, I also thank you to you because that makes everyone's jobs a little bit easier as well. All right. Also, we are going to talk about continuing education credits. The Board of Psychological Examiners is approved by the BACB as an ACE continuing education provider. Attending a meeting of the Board's Committee on Behavior Analysts is eligible for continuing education credit for maintenance of BACB certification and for Arizona licensure renewal. To claim this credit, make note of the code word provided hourly throughout the meeting. To report the code words to the board staff for purposes of earning continuing education credit, look for the link in the board's meeting page for this particular meeting. And for this meeting, Ms. Michelson will be supplying the code words. So thank you, Mrs. Michelson. All right. On to agenda item number 4, which is the approval of minutes, both the March 31st, 2025 regular session minutes and also March 31st, 2025 executive sessions. If there's someone who would like to offer a motion on for those minutes.
So moved.
All right. A motion has been made by Dr. Stenhoff. Do I have a second?
I cannot second, Madam Chair, but I do have to refrain from participating in this. I was not present for the March 31st meeting.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Ms. Dutton. Sorry, I didn't see your hand there.
I'll second.
All right. So the motion is made by Dr. Stenhoff. It has been seconded by Dr. Reitz. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Cool. The motion carries. All righty. So we will move on now to agenda item number 5, which is the discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendation to the board for the following matters. For agenda item 5A, which is the discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding a recommendation to the board for complaint 25-26 against Sarah Kelly. Before we discuss the agenda item, I have important information to announce. Please note that a person or representative of a person who has filed as a subject of a complaint and is present today may make a brief statement up to 5 minutes to the committee when prompted by me. The committee may also have questions for the complaint or respondent after their statement. Only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complaint and respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, it will make this request during case review. For everyone in attendance today, please make sure your audio remains on mute. And when prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, respondent, and their legal representative may unmute themselves at that time. Please note that the individuals in attendance who speak out without committee approval will be warned twice by the chair to not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and not permitted to re-enter the meeting. Please only use initials for patients or children and the complainant. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. For those in attendance, please be aware the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon parties present and the request to speak. Please note the committee may go into executive session on an item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2 to review a confidential records, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is confidential by state or federal law, and or ARS 38-431.03A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Jean Galvin. So before we proceed, are there any recusals or disclosures for this agenda item? Okay, seeing none. Dr. Rates, you're the lead on this matter. Would you please provide a summary for the committee?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. For this complaint, our complainant CM alleges that her child was mistreated by an RBT that was under the supervision of Ms. Kelly. She claims that the child's attempts at communication were ignored, that comfort items were removed, and that the client was made to engage in tasks that were too difficult and caused severe upset and abuse. Furthermore, the complainant alleges that Ms. Kelly should have filed a report as she is a mandated reporter. Finally, the complainant alleges that additionally, she was provided false information regarding the bathroom policy at the center where her child attended. We did receive a response from Ms. Kelly, and the response indicated that she was present on the day of the alleged incident and that the RBT was engaging in treatment that was part of the treatment plan, that the RBT may have missed some communication approximations, but that this, in her opinion, did not rise to the level of abuse and therefore was not required to mandate for report. Additionally, Ms. Kelly provided feedback that during the session, she observed the client did get back to a happy, relaxed, engaged state and was able to continue on with the session. That she provided feedback in the moment to the RBT, as well as feedback following at the end of the day and debriefed with the complainant. Regarding the allegation about the bathroom policy, Ms. Kelly states that she did not provide false information. She instead shared what was a preferred practice, but not a required practice by the center, and does not feel that that was false information. Ms. Kelly did provide several documents to the committee, and we thank her for that. This includes screenshots of communication, email exchanges, and session notes. And that concludes my review.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Rates. Do any committee members have questions for Dr. Rates at this time? Okay. Do we know if the complainant CM is present? I'm seeing Ms. Michelson shake her head, so I don't think they are here. Okay. So the respondent, Sarah Kelly, are you present? If you are, please unmute your microphone, introduce yourself for the record.
Yes, I am. I'm Sarah Kelly. I am a licensed behavior analyst down here in Tucson, and I am here with my clinical director as well, Carrie Chatham-Hunt.
Okay. You are welcome to make a brief statement to committee of up to 5 minutes at this time if you'd like.
Awesome. Thank you. So one, I wanted to thank you guys for allowing us to kind of have the opportunity to speak today. I know we're here to talk about a concern brought up by a parent, and I take these kinds of concerns very seriously. I want to be as open and transparent as possible, clarify any questions you may have, and to ensure that the support that I provide to my clients and their families is always at the highest quality of care. My goal is to provide ethical, supportive care to all the families I work with and do the best work that I can. So I appreciate the opportunity to clarify any questions you have, and if deemed needed, accept and apply any constructive feedback for the future.
Thank you. Any of my committee members, do we have questions for Ms. Kelly? Dr. Rates, nodding your head.
Yeah, I can start, given that I was lead, but certainly fellow committee members jump in. If you can share with us a little bit about the day of the incident. So tell us a little bit about how that session went and maybe a little bit about the end of that session and the communication that was provided.
Yes. So I was actually going that day to meet the parent for a parent training meeting. I was not intended to do direct supervision with the RBT. I was about 10 minutes, 15 minutes late due to a car accident that I got stuck behind, and I had informed the parent that I was running behind. When I got there at about 9:15, the client was, engaging in some vocal distress. It wasn't anything very highly escalated. I kind of put my stuff down and observed a little bit kind of to see what was going on. The client had had kind of some frequent absences due to some health related issues and illness. And so we had done pairing sessions for quite a while. We had only just recently started kind of addressing, some more of the goals written into the program and in his treatment plan. So, some of our manding goals, things like that. He did have some vocal approximations, but they were not very consistent. And so we were also going to implement and start teaching some use of visuals to communicate just so he had access to additional communication methods. When I first got there, he had a couple of his preferred items in his hands. From what I kind of got a brief conversation with the tech, she had some additional pieces with her. And she had the one icon visual to kind of support him manding for the extra items if he wanted, was trying to, build client motivation to do the point mand to the image or whatever it may be and kind of pairing it. What I observed was he would, get upset when she kind of like attempted prompting, resulting in no accurate response and would kind of run back to mom. What I then did was direct the technician to just model pointing to the image. She didn't even have the full opportunity to do that because as soon as she pulled out the visual, the client ran back to mom. I then directed the technician to not even do any of the modeling or just remove the images for now until we were able to get back to a state of happy, relaxed, and engaged. And so then that was just the focus. At that time, he didn't even really want her to like approach him to play. So I directed her to then just do some parallel play, model playing with items. And let him approach when he was ready. It took about maybe a minute or two. And then he approached her while she was playing with cars and racetrack items. I stayed for a few more minutes until he was, fully back to HRE. And then the mom and I went into my office for our meeting. We had our parent meeting for, I think it was an hour and 15 minutes where we were in my office and they were still out there doing the session in the clinic on their own. During that time, I reviewed the feedback that I had given the technician and kind of why I tried to, kind of explained how I tried to fade back little by little. And then when we did the full fade back, why our goal was to then get back to happy, relaxed, and engaged before we went back and tried again to support some communication. And then the client, maintained that happy, relaxed state for the remainder of the session, which went for a couple more hours. And eventually, started using some of the vocal approximations that he wasn't using earlier when he was in a more HRE state.
Thank you for that. Can you tell me a little bit about the allegation regarding the bathroom policy? Was there, and maybe, you can share what happened, but specifically, do you have a written bathroom policy that's provided to clients at the start of service?
We do not, no. We do not have a written bathroom policy as all of our clients are, approved for one-to-one therapy. So, that means they're one technician. If available and staff are able to, we do have, a preferred practice to, send out a message if you're able to for a diaper change, just to have a second person, whether it's, to support with transitions if needed, even if it's just to bring items to the bathroom. So it is a preferred practice that we, in a perfect world would be able to do all of the time, but knowing with, staffing and being, not being able to have floaters all of the time, we do not have a written policy that there is always two people. Mom had expressed that she, wanted to go with them. At that time, I had been off campus in the community by the time their session was ending. And so I got a message from the technician asking that I message mom, who had in my response, I noted we were kind of working on like a slow fade out of mom over the course of the month. So she was out of the room at the time. So the tech messaged me and asked that I let mom know that they were going to head to the bathroom. So I sent mom a message and then I was in the community. So didn't hear until later when she responded that she didn't look at her phone at that time and only saw it after they were coming back from the bathroom.
In terms of any kind of internal investigation, once the complainant had made these complaints to you and your agency regarding the concerns, was there any kind of internal investigation that happened there following that sort of parent identification of the complaint?
Myself and the technician were both, you know, had conversations privately with our clinical director as well as our VP of clinical. So we both had conversations with both of them, kind of explaining and detailing what had happened based on our responses. You know, they deemed that there was no, you know, mistreatment happening or anything of that. And so there was no further report needed.
And is there any documentation of those conversations?
Maybe an answer for you, Carrie, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, other than the documents we submitted to the Arizona, to the health plan, Arizona.
Okay. I'm not sure if you could hear it, but so we had gotten some, I guess, complaints from the health plan that the parent had submitted. And so the only things that were kind of documented are our responses in regards to conversations that we had in those documents, or in the responses I kind of sent you guys.
Thank you. In relation to the health plan and the complaint there, did you have, and forgive me, and again, thank you for sending over so much documentation. Forgive me if I missed it, but did we have sort of the full information that you sent to the health plan, and was there follow-up documentation as a result of that?
So I think in the response we sent you, it did not have our response to the health plan, but I do have it, so I can always send that to you. We did not receive any response from the health plan after that. A few months later, after I had sent all of my documentation to you guys for this review, we got a secondary complaint from the same health plan, from the same parent, with additional complaints or frustrations or concerns. So we also responded to that one, and I can forward that along to you as well if needed. And we also did not hear anything back from the health plan regarding that one.
Madam Chair, that's all I have right now. But it looks like other committee members have some questions.
Yeah, Ms. Denton, I see your hand, but before I have you go, just really quick, Ms. Kelly, are you still in network with that health plan that you received the complaints from?
Yes.
Thank you. Ms. Denton, over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to kind of ease my questions in a little bit of a different direction. I definitely see that you've got some really nice documentation. You know, your treatment plan does outline exactly what it is that you were recommending for this particular individual, including like the strategies that were aligned with what was in the complaint from the parent. So when I look at this, you know, the parent had noted concerns about the use of functional communication, how you were prompting, using visuals, utilizing strategies that were outlined in the documentation that I saw surrounding withholding tangible items listed as comfort items until functional communication had occurred, and then delivering those. And so I really do appreciate what I see in your treatment plan. I think I saw a behavior plan. It didn't have a title at the top, but it looked like a behavior plan to me, where I see, you know, the target behaviors operationally defined, looking in there and seeing, okay, this is how you should respond in this situation. And what I see is that there was fidelity and alignment with what you recommended. So I haven't said a question yet. I was laying the stage. The question comes in here with parent knowledge of your recommended strategies. I see on your treatment plan that you've got a signature on there. I know you wrote this treatment plan. Do you have a treatment plan with the parent's signature, or anything that you could kind of explain to? Was the parent educated on your recommended strategies, and did she provide consent to these strategies?
So the treatment plan was from the very initial assessment that we had done. All of the information that we kind of had regarding the challenging behaviors were just per parent report. The client then started, you know, we had it kind of per parent report to kind of start tracking and maybe getting some good information for it. So they were kind of suggestions just based on parent report. We hadn't really had to start implementing any of them yet. And as we hadn't seen a bunch of the behavior yet, either due to the client's low attendance, you know, a lot of the beginning were just focusing on pairing because of the client's, you know, sporadic attendance. So we hadn't really seen a lot of the challenging behavior yet to really dive into actually implementing any of those things. The parent meeting that I had scheduled for that day was our very first parent meeting after, you know, the month or so. Like I think it was potentially 20 or 30 some days of attendance. That was our like first parent meeting to kind of start going over those things, where we then really focused on what had happened in that session and detailed kind of why the client was responding, or the technician was responding in the way that they were.
Can you tell me a little bit about how parents receive your treatment plan? Like, what is your timeline for? You've written your treatment plan. You have, you know, either submitted it to the insurance plan, or you've reviewed it with the parent first or after, or can you just tell me what that process looks like?
So typically once I've kind of, you know, done the initial assessment, done the conversations with parents, I usually talk about the goals that we'll likely do in follow-up phone calls, or, you know, if I need to get more information regarding potential scheduling. We review goals, we review some of the potential behaviors that we're going to target for reduction based on their report or based on things we observed. And so those are all kind of done via, you know, telephone communication after the initial assessment, or if there's something we observed during the initial assessment, that's usually when I kind of discuss those things with them.
Okay. And did that happen with this client's mother?
Yes, during our, so she also attended every session. She didn't just drop off and leave the client at the clinic. She stayed for the whole session with her other child as well, which is why we're kind of working on that slow fade back process. And so during the sessions, while, you know, the RBT was working with the client, you know, the parent would, you know, engage with them and play with them sometimes, and then would kind of step back. And while I was doing supervision with the technician, I would also have the conversations with the parents about some of the things that were occurring or things we were going to be targeting and why.
Do you believe that the parent was appropriately educated on your recommended strategies, and she was aware of your recommendation for functional communication training? She was aware of your behavior plan.
She definitely was aware of the focus on communication and functional communication training. That was one of her biggest areas of, you know, concern for his skill acquisition. We did talk a lot about, you know, expanding the modes of communication because he only had some vocal approximations. She was really excited about the introduction of visuals to support communication. And then for the behavior plan, at that point, as we've kind of had discussed during our sessions, excuse me, with the mother, we hadn't observed any of the behaviors yet. And so they were all kind of per parent report. But I would, during the session, you know, talk with her about how she was responding to them, or things that she was observing, things that helped at home, things like that. And so specifically, we hadn't fully implemented a behavior plan at that point because there were no behaviors had occurred during session. But we talked a lot about, you know, the focus on HRE, the focus on client assent or pulling back when needed and getting back to HRE. So that was all discussed during our sessions.
Do parents see your session notes?
We just figured out some sort of access on Central Reach where they can access through a parent portal. Prior to that, they did not, but she was sent all of them with the client's medical record.
Okay. And that was not a, like, you should, like, absolutely please send parent every single session note kind of recommendation from the Committee on Behavior Analysts. I was just really looking at trying to gather some information as far as how much knowledge did the parent have surrounding your recommended strategies, you know, what level of transparency was there, and finding out, you know, if the parent was really informed about what it was that was going on. Okay. Do any other committee members have questions on the same line of, because I want to kind of switch gears.
I'm looking for my hand raise button, but I'm not going to find it quickly enough. So,
go ahead, Dr. Stefanoff.
All right. Thank you. Just a follow-up question. So Ms. Dent was asking if, you know, the level of transparency and whether the parent was informed. To your knowledge, how was the parent how did you understand that the parent received the information and they understood the information? How would you characterize that they acknowledged and agreed to what you were proposing for the treatment plan?
My understanding of that was based on our conversations. It was a lot of, you know, verbal approval, a lot of, you know, opportunities for questions to be asked, a lot of input on my end asked from her end regarding strategies, you know, obviously, you know, areas of need or goals that she would like to prioritize for the client. And then, as I said, she was there fully attending for every single session. I, you know, didn't provide supervision every single session, but the sessions that I was there for supervision in, there was constant communication throughout the session, you know, opportunities for questions, explaining the things that we were doing, you know, time for, you know, questions from her, follow up, all of those. And they were all very positive experiences. Even on the day in question that the complaint is from, she was there. I was talking to her, you know, as I was giving the tech feedback, as we were kind of making observations, you know, at question time was offered. We then also, when we went into our parent meeting for that hour and 15 minutes, you know, again, I reviewed everything that I had told the technician and why, you know, we were in there for an hour and 15 minutes talking about, you know, many things, but she had a lot of opportunity to kind of ask follow-up questions, ask for insight, bring up any of the concerns in the moment. But it was all kind of very cordial and positive at that time.
Okay. And then just a follow-up question to that, I you know, I appreciate the discussion you had with the parent. I noted on the documentation, there is a place for the parent to sign, but there is no signature on those. Is there a reason for that, or for the missing signatures, or?
That would have just been oversight by myself. I did not get one with the parent signature.
Okay, that's all I have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, Ms. Denton, I know you want to take it in a different direction. And so if you'd like the hand back, then floor is yours.
Thank you for predicting. I tried to get my hand. You already knew. Okay, so some of the other questions that I had, one of them I think will be a very short line of questioning. Let me lower my hand. The parent, whenever they filed the complaint, one of their allegations was that you failed to report abuse as a mandated reporter. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of explain, how do I ask this? Did you see abuse occurring with this client?
Sorry, I did not see abuse occur. What I observed was, you know, building client motivation for an item. I observed some attempts at prompting, some manding. And then I observed the client engage in some vocal distress and precursors and run over to the mother. And then the demand was dropped. And then feedback was then given to kind of fade back until the client was able to get HRE.
Did the client experience any injuries during this incident?
They did not. Mostly they mostly engaged in some vocal distress and ran over and mom picked them up for hugs.
I don't have any other questions on this line here. Do any other committee members before I totally shift gears? Okay, Dr.
Yeah, I do.
Your chair.
Along those lines, do you have policy and procedure? Do your staff go through mandated reporter training as an agency? And if so, like at what cadence?
Annual mandated reporter training.
Annual mandated reporter training.
Great. Thank you. Back to you, Ms. Denton, if you want to switch gears to something else.
I do. I think whenever I was looking through the documentation, I saw that the parent had reported in their complaint that the client was being asked to do something that was outside of their ability level and was causing frustration. And it kind of seemed to go in this direction. I also saw that he was receiving speech services at another location, correct?
Correct.
Did you have any communication with his speech language pathologist during the assessment process or the treatment process?
We did not have that chance yet. We were working on getting ROIs and things signed, but we hadn't had any communication with other services yet.
Okay. And did you have any sort, he had speech before ABA?
Yes.
Did you receive any speech reports or records to review during your assessment process?
I did not know. Everything that was provided regarding speech was either probed during our initial intake or was per parent report.
I have no other questions at this time, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Denton. I have a couple. I know you said he missed quite a few sessions. And I also noted that you said you provided, 26% supervision, which is, more than we see because there's a lot of cancellations. Can you just give me a kind of rough estimate of how many total hours, like direct care hours, that he was receiving services at your agency?
I could pull that up. His sessions were about 3 hours long, and he attended, I think I haven't noted how many sessions, so I'd have to do the math, but I could pull up the actual number in Central Reach if you would like me to.
Like a general, like less than 50 hours, like how many or total sessions that he came, like just a general ballpark would be.
Approximately 12. I know we looked at it previously for a concrete one, but it was approximately potentially 12 to 15.
Okay. And did he have the same RBT assigned to him during those 12 to 15 sessions?
He did.
Did mom at any point during those prior 12 to 15 sessions voice any concerns with the interactions between the RBT and the client?
She did not. She actually, in some of the emails that were provided in the documentation I sent you guys, noted that he previously would repeat the technician's name at home, would be very excited to come, and that, they were very happy with the RBT up until then.
Okay. And in terms of your supervision, it's a lot, percentage wise. I know that mom put somewhere in there, you weren't there. Like you weren't there when she got there she was left to just the RBT. Was she under the impression that you were going to be doing supervision every direct care session that was coming in? Can you talk to me kind of through that and where her maybe miscommunication or interpretation may lie?
Yeah, I was supposed to be there at 9 o'clock, but the purpose was to meet her for our scheduled parent meeting, not to do direct supervision. She was aware that I did not do supervision every session because she attended every session and I was only there maybe twice a week. And so she was aware that it wasn't a constant, BCBA is there 100% of the time, and that was not our intended purpose the day of the complaint.
Okay. Thank you for that. Other committee members, do we have questions for Ms. Kelly? It is done.
Thank you. I want to kind of come back to the consent piece. Mm-hmm. And whenever I look through the documents, I was like looking through it again to make sure that I didn't miss it, and I still might have missed it. The documents that were provided to us include the treatment authorization from the insurance company, the initial treatment plan, the foundations of quick care tips document, a seizure plan, and a discharge summary. What I didn't see is anything from like the intake other than that initial treatment plan. I'm trying to gather information here to determine how the parent consented to treatment. Can you give me an overview of how you view the parent consented to your treatment in a written fashion? Because you talked about some of the verbal consent, but did you have any writing?
I do have our, if I have, it's like written kind of chicken scratch notes, but we do have our kind of intake questionnaire where we have, you know, a lot of different questions regarding, you know, what are the, you know, interfering or challenging behaviors that are at home. We have questions regarding, you know, client, you know, biggest areas of need, what parent priorities would be. So we have a lot of those questions related to what they would like us to focus on during treatment that helps us kind of gather information to guide, you know, what some of our potential goals will be paired with our direct assessment of the client.
They complete a report, the initial assessment, okay.
Carrie also said there's also, so that's the kind of interview questionnaire that we conduct when they do attend for the initial assessment. But on top of that, there is a intake questionnaire that is sent to them prior to coming that we can also send you.
And consent packet.
And a consent packet.
I would love to see that consent packet.
Yeah. For additional things I'm sending, do I send it to the email that I was sending things to previously, or is there something else you'd like me to send it to?
Scully.
Okay, perfect. We will get that sent.
Thank you.
Ms. Denton, is that something you'd like to review prior to us doing any kind of deliberation?
It is, Madam Chair.
Okay. Well, while we're waiting for that to come in, do other committee members have questions? Okay. Then Ms. Michelson, I'll lean on you here for recommendation. I'm wondering if it would be appropriate for us to take a brief comfort break while we wait for that documentation to come in and then be sent to us. But then, of course, we'd need a hot minute or two to review. So I'm looking for recommendations, Ms. Michelson, on how to best organize our meeting today.
Yes, Madam Chair. I don't know how long it will take the licensee to send that information, and the committee will also need an opportunity to review it as well. So we could possibly either table this case and move on to the other complaint on this agenda, or take a 15-minute break, whatever the committee's preference is.
Do I have a preference from my fellow committee members? Dr. Senhoff?
Not for me. I'm wanting to comply with the chair's decision.
Dr. Rates, this is a democracy. I like votes. Dr. Rates, oh. Do you have a preference?
I really don't have a preference.
I will give you a preference since you like preferences. Can I have 15 minutes?
Sure. I guess so, Ms. Kelly, do you think that you is, I guess, how, if we think it's going to take more than, you know, 10 minutes for you to find that documentation, that will be a bit problematic. So I guess, can you give us a time estimate for
15 minutes should be fine. I should be able to get that sent over pretty quickly.
Okay. So it is 10:10. So we will come back at 10:25, hopefully with documentation sent to us from board staff. So 15 minutes, get a snack. Get snacks. See you soon.
Thank you.
It's 10:25 and I see my fellow committee members and board staff present. During that break, Ms. Kelly, thank you very much. She did send over the requested documentation to Ms. Michelson. She then provided it to committee members several minutes ago. However, I'd like to check in with my committee members and would we like some additional time to finish reviewing the documentation?
Yes, please.
Madam Chair, yes, please. And then you said the documentation, is it in the folder? Is that correct?
Ms. Michelson sent a direct link. That's how I accessed it. I'm not sure if it's...
Oh, okay.
Dr. Senhoff, committee member, did upload it to that folder, but you may need to refresh the page to see the addition.
I see. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Michelson.
So committee members, would 10 additional minutes be sufficient for you all? Okay, so at 10:35, is that okay if we come back then?
Thank you.
Question from Ms. Kelly.
Yes, more of a statement. I also just realized I did not add the responses to the health plan complaints, so I will get those sent to you guys right now as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. All right, committee members, I'll see you back in 10. as well as board staff. I know just a moment ago, we also got an update with additional information with that response to the healthcare plan as well. But I wanted to touch base with my fellow committee members to see if they are ready to start deliberation, or if we need more time that perhaps we consider tabling for a future reschedule.
I do not feel, Madam Chair, that I need additional time.
Okay. Dr. Stenhoff?
Madam Chair, nor do I.
Okay. Dr. Reitz?
We can continue.
Okay. All righty. So Ms. Denton, I know that you were the one who requested the kind of written policy. Did you have any questions, comments, concerns about that?
I will save my comments and review for deliberations.
Okay. All right. So do we have any more questions for Ms. Kelly at this time?
Madam Chair, I just have two more.
Okay.
First one is, in what ways was the toilet training protocol violated or not conducted with the fidelity at which it was written?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
In what ways was the toilet training protocol not conducted with fidelity? So in what ways did it differ from the way it was written? I'll revise it to that.
As it was written with, in regards to the goal in the treatment plan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the protocol in which toilet training is conducted, yeah.
Yes. So at the time with mom still attending fully, mom originally was taking the lead on all of the toileting with the technician there from the beginning because, you know, she wanted to make sure we kind of saw the technician saw anything, you know, the things that she did in there. So she hadn't even really started independently doing the full, you know, toileting task analysis procedures as mom was still supporting in those bathrooming moments. The times that she was able to go with them and started slowly taking over more of the lead in the toileting, you know, it was followed, you know, kind of following a least to most prompting strategy. There were moments where mom at first had mentioned, you know, she was okay with us using things like, you know, preferred YouTube videos or things to support with tolerating sitting, which the technician would implement at those moments. And then there were times when the parent requested that they be used less. So we followed that as well. But really it was followed pretty spot on with the exception of mom was still supporting for a lot of the moments because she was there for a lot of it. There was only, they didn't really go when the mom was stepping out of the room, because she was only stepping out for 30 minute periods. Up until then, the day that we had our parent meeting, she finally had stepped out with me for our parent meeting for an hour and 15 minutes. And then we'd kind of progressed and had a plan from that parent meeting for her for the rest of the week to kind of slowly increase the step out times. But the mom was there for all of the parent or the toileting.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, that's it. I thought I had two, but I only had that one question. Thank you.
If there's no further questions or discussion, we will need to adopt a motion specific to case 25-26 consisting of a recommendation to the board. The committee will now begin their deliberation. Please note that deliberation is a time for committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruption from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees. So Dr. Reitz, will you please begin the deliberation for the complaint?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think for me in reviewing this complaint, I appreciate that the licensee was able to provide lots of documentation so we could do a thorough review. I do think that the family, the complainant had information about what type of interventions would be implemented, and appreciate that we were able to see that documentation, specifically the consent form that clearly identified what applied behavior analysis is and what things might be expected in terms of risks and benefits. It's unfortunate
I think that the complainant perhaps still maybe didn't fully understand all that was going to happen, or was unhappy with what was starting to occur within session as targets were starting to be implemented. For me at this point, I'm not sure that I see anything that rises to the level of discipline. I think there are things to be learned. I would suggest that, again, I would like to hear my fellow committee members' thoughts. I think there's some policies that could be put in place that would help these situations, and hopefully they would not happen again. But for me, I'm not sure that I see this rising to that level.
Thank you, Dr. Reitz. Dr. Senoff, I saw your hand first.
Yeah, thank you. Madam Chair, is Dr. Reitz, was that a motion or just a statement?
I can make that a motion, Dr. Stenhoff. I would make a motion that we move to recommend that this be dropped.
Okay. So, I'll second that motion.
And Ms. Reitz, that would be a recommendation to the full board that the matter be dismissed. Is there no violations?
Okay. And then Dr. Stenhoff, you still second with that clarification?
Correct. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. So it's been seconded, or sorry, the motion's been made by Dr. Reitz to dismiss, and the motion has been seconded by Dr. Stenhoff. I know Ms. Denton has her hand up, so I'm assuming there's a little bit more discussion before we move into a vote. So go ahead, Ms. Denton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I definitely agree with my fellow committee members. I definitely think there is some practices that could go into place to ensure that parents are fully informed of what is going on. I understand that you were very early in treatment and things, you know, there's only so much that you can go through. I think that my concern comes from the lack of specific consent for the procedures, because you outlined them very well. I was reading through things and I thought, I know exactly what should happen. And when I looked at the complaint from the parent, I was like, that's what happened. So then looking at this, one thing that would have probably led to less questions on my behalf, at least, would be to see a signature from that parent, to see that there was a session note for a meeting that you had where you outlined what your recommendations were, as opposed to just that general consent. However, with that being said, I don't think it rises to a statutory violation. So whenever we're looking through this, just there are lots of people who are on this meeting, and I'm sure there are many licensees sitting here wondering, how do I not show up and have to do this? So just tips and tricks from your friendly committee member. The more documentation that you can have and meetings that you're having to inform parents, I think the less likely it's going to be that you'll have a situation where a parent comes forward and says, you did something that I did not agree with. Because what you had outlined, it's what happened. So that is just all the discussion that I have, Madam Chair, for this thing. And I am ready to move to a vote.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Denton. Ms. Kelly, thank you. Oh, sorry. Ms. Reitz?
I was just going to make one more comment, again, in terms of documentation, and I would just suggest that you look at continuing to think about your policies around when a family has a complaint or escalates concerns. I do see that, you know, when you guys have shared with us what you did, I would just suggest that you document those things and, again, have those records. And then I would also just recommend that you add to your client policies and procedures something around how you manage toileting.
Thank you, Dr. Waits. I did want to thank Ms. Kelly for all the documentation that she did send. Sometimes we don't get very much or it's very difficult to follow. So at least as a reviewing member, it was a lot easier to go through those things. I agree with the recommendations from fellow committee members to kind of tighten up some of those things. I will go back to something Ms. Denton said when she asked about kind of the ROI with the SLP. I know sometimes it's hard to get caregivers to get in all that paperwork, but seeing that he was in services, you know, somewhere else before starting, I think is part of the records review for that initial assessment. If you could have gained some access there as well, that might have been helpful. But I will also say too, for the amount of time he was in your care, you spent, you know, a substantial amount of supervision with that client. You had the same RBT every single time. So that consistency is also something nice to see. And that level of oversight is something I think that at least for me helped, you know, move me in the same direction that I don't think we have, you know, cause here. So I'm also ready to vote if everyone else is good with that. So the motion, just as a reminder, it was made by Dr. Raitt, seconded by Dr. Stenhoff, that we would make the recommendation to the board that this case get dismissed. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion carries. So for the complaint 2526 regarding Sarah Kelly, we have made a decision to make a recommendation to the board that this be dismissed. So thank you to all those who participated in this agenda item today. The parties will be notified by board staff in the near future regarding next steps. So please contact them if you have any questions regarding the committee's decision today.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Yep. Thanks very much. All righty. So normally between complaints, we do a comfort break, but we've had like two already. So if everyone's okay, we'll just move on to agenda 5B. Is that okay with committee members? Guglio?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Very good. Okay. So agenda item 5B, complaint number 25-31, Spencer Freeman. Dr. Stenhoff, you are, oh, sorry, before I proceed, do we have any recusals or disclosures for this agenda item? Nope. Okay. So Dr. Stenhoff, since you're the lead, would you please provide a summary for the committee?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Freeman has been a BCBA since 2020 and is licensed in Texas. He reported in the documentation that he is not practicing in Arizona and doesn't plan to in the future. He was approved to practice in Arizona in November of 2023 as part of an agreement according to ARS 36-3606, which approved for a telehealth provider and to agree to provide an annual update regarding the number of patients served in Arizona and total type number and type of encounters in the state for the previous year. Mr. Freeman did not provide those data by the one-year requirement, nor has he done so at least as of last week during my review, or this last week in the review. As such, the board voted to open a complaint against Mr. Freeman. In a letter dated January 24th of 2025, the board requested a list of employment history for the past 36 months that include the company's names and address, dates of employment, job title, and supervisors' contact information. The reason that he applied for telehealth registry at the and the extent of his practice in Arizona, what his plans are for practicing in the state of Arizona going forward, and reasoning for failing to submit the annual registry update required by statute, not providing updated contact information to the board, to which Mr. Freeman did provide that information, which begins in the documentation beginning on page 4. The board complaint was as follows. According to 32-2091-09A, the board on its own motion may investigate evidence that appears to show that a behavior analyst is incompetent as a behavior analyst or guilty of unprofessional conduct. ARS 36-3606A9 annual updates of healthcare providers registration for accuracy and submits to the applicable healthcare provider regulatory board or agency a report with the number of patients the provider served in the state and the total number of type of encounters in the state. And then also additionally that according to ARS 32-2066B, a licensee shall inform the board in writing of the licensee's current residence, address, office address, and telephone number within 30 days of each change of information. So At this point, that was the reason the complaint was filed by the board, and I'm happy to answer any questions if any of my committee members have any.
Thank you, Dr. Stenhoff. Do any committee members have questions for Dr. Stenhoff at this time? Okay. As Dr. Stenhoff mentioned, there's no complainant for this case. The complaint was opened by the board. So I do see that Mr. Freeman is here. So if you could please unmute your microphone and introduce yourself for the record, and then you're also welcome to make a brief statement to the committee for up to 5 minutes.
Hi, good morning to the board. Thanks for having me. Spencer Freeman, I'm a behavior analyst practicing in the state of Colorado currently in Denver. My only statement to make at the very beginning is a three-part apology. Part of it is I did fail to update my information appropriately, and so I apologize for that. The second part of it is that as part of that information that needed to be updated, my contact information was not appropriately updated, which led to a pretty big lack of correspondence for me in the initial onset of this issue. And then as well with that, did not attend my first meeting. There was another hearing in January, I believe, that I was invited to that I was not aware of. And so I apologize for not showing to that. And the third part of it is just the resource cost. This is cost to the board. I apologize for this issue taking up so much of your time. And thanks for having me here.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Just to clarify, right now you're at the committee. So we're not the board. We're a committee that reports to them. So I just wanted to clarify for folks on the call. With that, I will turn to committee members to ask questions at this time of Mr. Freeman. Dr. Stenhoff, I see you unmuted. Go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Freeman, I just a couple of things to point, and in part, I this is also for public awareness, but in the documentation, you did sign an attestation indicating that you'll annually update your registration with the current license or board and submit to the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners a report with the number of patients. When you sign that, and you indicate also in the documentation, I'm going to throw this in as well, is that you weren't quite aware of that because of, I think a clearinghouse or somebody helped, put that information together yet. It was your signature that was on there. So, when that was signed, did you understand the requirements, placed on by state statute and rule for that?
I did understand, and if you want me to speak more to the clearinghouse that you mentioned, I can give some more information on that. But I did understand, and it is my signature. I think my comment would be the amount of time that passed between the signature and me being required to update the thing. A lot of different organizational and just professional things that happened between then, and so I just failed to obligate them.
Okay. And then also, I'm going to ask this question as well, but that on page 18 of the packet, which you may or may not have, but there's just another signature that indicated that you read the Arizona Revised Statutes and the Arizona Administration Code sections that govern ABA practice in Arizona, and you acknowledged also that you understood those. Was there a misunderstanding in those when you signed it, or did you understand those the statutes and rules as well, or the code as well?
No, I understood them, and the signature is mine.
Okay. All right. And then just a follow-up question, and you may have provided this documentation. Did you provide any services to anybody in the state of Arizona, whether it's supervisory, oversight of clients, and so on?
Not according to this registry. It's in my written response that I initially gave in the email chain. I did provide some in-person services in Arizona prior to this telehealth accreditation because the company I was with, Ascend Behavior Partners, had some operations there. But I was over the clinic starting in Colorado from the time of this on and didn't see any patients and didn't provide any services under this accreditation.
Okay. And then when you indicated that you were providing services several months to maybe years ago, were you a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Arizona at the time?
I believe so, yes. I had to go through that process as well. And I think that's how y'all have my LBA from Texas, is that was a requirement as part of that process to get that approved.
Were you an Arizona licensed behavior analyst at that time when you were providing services in the state of Arizona?
Yes.
not to interrupt you, Dr. Senhoff, but Ms. Michelson, would you be able to provide confirmation of the license dates for Mr. Freeman for the rest of us? I don't remember seeing that in the file. And I apologize if it is there and I missed it.
See,
Madam Chair, I missed it as well, if it is there.
Okay.
Issuance state committee members for his telehealth registration was November 3rd of 2023.
Was there any state licensure? Oh, sorry.
I'm not aware of Mr. Freeman having a license previous to that. I don't see anything for Arizona.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Michelson.
So I think it would be helpful for Mr. Freeman to clarify what he's referring to, because I don't see any prior license information.
If I may, I might be confused and I apologize. I'm remembering coordinating with the state of Texas for getting my LBA license over there sent over to y'all. I might be misconfusing, and that might have been a part of this telehealth process that I'm considering, in which case the answer would have been no to my previous question. I apologize.
Okay, thank you for clarifying.
Do you have the dates on which you would have provided services in the state of Arizona prior to the telehealth?
It would have been in 2021, and I don't off the top of my head, but I can probably get them if needed. I would have to correspond with my previous organization. Okay.
Still thinking, Dr. Sinha?
Well, I was just actually going to make a motion. So, and the motion is, and I don't know if this is if a motion is required in this, but I think based on just the adjudication of where we're at right now, I think we need to gain some additional information. That is the practice in the state. So we have the issue right now, and Ms. Galvin, if you could direct on this as needed too, but we currently have the issue right now of not responding to the telehealth requirements as stipulated. But through this process, we've also identified that there's a possibility that services were provided in the state of Arizona without being a licensed behavior analyst in the state. So my motion is that could we do a FAIR, if that's the correct course of action, and obtain that documentation so that we can more clearly review this case?
You may. I don't know if it would be done through a FAIR or direct staff to just, you know, communicate with Mr. Freeman, six of one, half dozen of another, and request the information that you just articulated.
And I would take the latter as that as well, if that's agreeable to Madam Chair and the other committee members. And at this point, I don't have any further questions. I would like to review the information for it. I think I'm clear enough on the telehealth part of the complaint, but I would like to further investigate the practice in the state through additional documentation. So I don't know if tabling is the correct or would be the correct.
Yeah, continue this matter until the next meeting or until the committee receives adequate notice of the information that you've requested.
Okay.
Is that a motion?
So is there, my motion as described. So.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I have a second.
Okay. So Dr. Senhoff made a motion as described, get some additional information. It has been seconded by Ms. Denton. Any other discussion? Dr. Senhoff?
Madam Chair, just for Mr. Freeman's information, the reason I brought this up is because it appears that there was some practice in the state of Arizona and without being licensed prior to the telehealth. And so we wanted to just kind of look at some of the documentation for that so that we can more effectively adjudicate this complaint. So.
Okay. Are we ready to vote then on the motion? All right. All in favor? Aye.
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 Okay. Any opposed? Okay, the motion carries. So the motion is that we are going to table this until additional documentation has been had. Mr. Freeman, thank you for being here today. Board staff will be in touch with you in the very near future of what the next steps will be and in terms of the requirements that they'll need from you. Alrighty. Ms. Michelson, I know we had like a 30-minute hiatus, but if we do that, I think we should still be at the hour now, like technical teaching time for an hour to be able to provide that first code word for a CEU, if you'd be so kind.
Yes, Madam Chair. The first code word for the CE credit is Croatia. Again, it's Croatia. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
May I ask Ms. Michelson about these code words?
Sure.
Did these code words originate with you, or are these Ms. Malice's code words?
That is a great question, Ms. Denton. They are code words that I came up with and have...
I'm so excited. I got to tell you, I have to find happiness in these meetings, and I look forward to these code words. So
it'll all make sense in a couple hours.
I'm so excited. That's all, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Denton. All right. Before we move on to number 7, is everyone on my committee okay? Keep going. Cool. Head nods. Very good. Thumbs ups. Thank you, guys. All right. So we are going to move on to agenda item number 7. I think it's number 6. Right? Sorry, it says 7 on my agenda, but I think it's 6. So 6, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding a recommendation to the board pertaining to approval of behavior analyst applications. Before we go into our assigned cases, is there any recusals or disclosures? Ms. Denton.
I do have a recusal for applicant number 9, Khorshid Rustami. I am recused from that application and will turn off and exit temporarily and then come back whenever that one is reviewed.
Cool. All righty. Anybody else? All right. Then I will turn it over to Dr. Raitz because she has the first batch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will start with my clean list, if you will. I have 2 applicants, Rebecca Elton and make sure I'm getting names correct. Donna Jaffari, I'm so sorry if I am not pronouncing your names correct. For these 2 applicants, my review of the file, including the applicant's education, supervised experience, examination performance, and declarations, find it to be both administratively and substantively complete, and I would recommend that we move them forward to the full board for approval. I have 3 others. I will start with applicant number 1, Shannon. For this application, there's just some confusion. I don't know if the applicant is with us today, and perhaps if they are, they can clear it up. But on page 2 of the application, and then on the tracker, and then on the supervised form, the amount of supervision does not match on them. So I think we need a bit of clarity. So if we look where we have supervision sites, there are supervised hours indicated here for the different centers and individuals. If we move on to the form, which can be found on page 15 or 16. It is very, very small for me. Hopefully fellow committee members didn't have the same problem. I was able to get it enlarged. And it looks like the numbers that are provided for, particularly I think it's Supervisor Skyra, is inconsistent with what is then listed on page 18. So for the supervised work experience and independent field work, it indicates that Skyra provided 1,500 hours of supervision. But on the other documents of this application, that number is much smaller. So I just think we need some clarification on how much supervision was provided by whom.
Yes. Can you guys hear me okay? Okay. I am pulling up my document real quick. Sorry, it's like taking me a second to find everything. Okay, so the hours for Skyra, those are the ones that are the only ones that are like weird.
They all seem to be inconsistent. So in your application, you've listed your supervision sites and the amount of hours, and those don't seem to match up with the sort of Excel sheet that we provide that you fill in the information. Those numbers are different. And then finally, the actual form that Skyra signed is a third number.
Okay.
So I think we just need some clarification on how many hours of supervision. Was this like an error? I see the document that was signed by Skyra indicating she provided 1500 hours. But that's not what you've indicated in other spots.
Yeah, no. On the final form that like Skyra signed, where the only supervision she gave me, she did, it was 63.18 hours of supervision out of like the total of 871 hours for just under her. And then I had multiple supervisors. But yeah, so those are her numbers. It was 63.18 out of a total of 871.47.
So sorry, I'm just trying to look at dates here. Forgive me.
No, you're totally good.
So you're saying, I guess the confusion I'm having is we have two documents. One indicates a total of 829 hours, and then the next document is signed by Skyra for 1500. So if you have the 829 plus 67, if that's what you're sharing, we're short hours. I think we have an added confusion of why do we have a signed document of 1500 hours if that's not correct.
Yeah, yes, because I should have had three supervisors sending in, because the things that like I had to submit to Skyra to have her like submit to you guys separately, right? Because I had three separate supervisors who should have all sent in.
So I think maybe we just need to issue. I look to my fellow committee members. Perhaps we need to issue a FAIR to get some more information around supervision, because we don't have three. We have two. One that was signed by a Renee Mallory.
Yes.
And that shows supervision by one, two, three individuals totaling, I believe, 829. And then the only other document we have is a document that was submitted. And it has your signature on it, as well as Skyra's, indicating 1500 hours.
Okay.
So fellow committee members, I don't know if you have other recommendations, but perhaps we just need to table this one and issue a FAIR for some additional information around supervision.
Agreed.
Okay.
Do we put that as a separate motion or we do that at the end?
Can just make, I don't know.
At the end? All the fairs at the end? Things we how we've been doing that?
Okay.
Okay, we'll go with that. Thanks, Ms. Michelson.
So okay. You'll receive some additional communication, but okay. We'll just want to get some additional information around supervision so we can clear that up.
Okay.
Okay. I have two more, Madam Chair. Give me just a moment. My next one is for applicant number two, Sabrina. I don't know if the applicant is here with us today. The only question I have for this one is that while the application is complete, the individual did list themselves in an employment role as a BCBA since November of 24. And so want to get some additional information around whether or not the individual is practicing and if they are receiving supervision. Know if the applicant's here today.
I don't see them. I don't see them listed unless they have a different name, or I don't see any. I see a couple phone numbers, so I don't know if they're perhaps one of the three phone numbers. But if not, then I think we probably need to go the fair route.
Yep. So I would make that motion later, but we would need a fair to better understand that time frame. And then my last applicant is number five, Genesis Lopez. Again, I don't know if the applicant is with us. While the application is complete, there is again a time period where the applicant has listed themselves as a behavior analyst and would like to know if that's happening here in the state of Arizona, and if so, some questions around supervision. I see your hand up, Madam Chair.
Hi, I'm here.
I see the hand too, Ms. Dr. Rates. We'll let Ms. Lopez talk and then we'll see what the hand raises.
Okay. Hi, Ms. Lopez. Can you tell us, I see that you've listed your employment as a behavior analyst. Are you currently in the state of Arizona and practicing?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And are you practicing as a behavior analyst? Can you describe what you're doing?
Yes, I practice as a behavior analyst. I conduct assessments, write programs, work with families, providing parent education, technician training.
And are you currently receiving supervision from a licensed behavior analyst?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And can you tell us a little bit about what that looks like?
Yeah, so my licensed behavior analyst and I work pretty closely. We co-supervise, so there's at least 1 to 2 days a week where we're in sessions together, directly observing clients' programs, implementation from staff. We also conduct family guidance meetings together, and then about bi-monthly, so every 2 weeks, we have one-on-one supervision sessions meetings.
Okay. I appreciate that. It's very helpful when individuals come to the meeting. And just for the record, the question we ask that is because you are not able to independently practice until you are licensed by the state. And so you do need to be practicing under a licensed behavior analyst. So thank you for sharing that information. It's very helpful. With that, I think that this application could move forward to the board for approval.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Those
Dr.
are all
Reitz.
Of my applicants.
Great. I saw a hand up and then it went down. So
excuse me.
Up. Yep.
I have my hand up as well.
Oh, okay. Sorry. You must be on my second screen. I believe you are applicant number two that maybe Dr. Reitz had a question about. So if that is you, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. I'm Sabrina. I didn't hear the question, but one of my coworkers is on. Sorry, I was in a session, so I just wanted to see if I could answer that for you guys.
Sure. Yes. Thank you for being here. My question is that you have yourself listed as in an employment role as a board certified behavior analyst since November of 24. Are you here in the state of Arizona?
I am.
And are you practicing as a behavior analyst? And if so, are you under the supervision of a licensed behavior analyst?
Yeah, so I'm under a licensed BCBA, Brittany Jones, at the clinic. Right now I'm doing direct services, so like in session with my clients for the most part.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for being here. Appreciate your colleague for telling you to jump back in. That has made things much easier. With that, Madam Chair, I would now change and suggest that this application be moved forward to the board for approval.
Thank you.
All right. We have another applicant. You are coming up. So if it's specific to your application, we haven't reviewed yours yet. So if you're okay to wait till then, but if it's an urgent matter, then go ahead and unmute yourself. Okay. All right, we are going to move on to my bunch of applicants. Full disclosure, I am going to have a challenging time with several of your names here. So I apologize in advance. If you're on the call, please feel free to correct me and interrupt me with how I go about those. So Tisha, your recusal is in my first batch on the clean list. So you can feel free to listen to that. So my first ones, I'd like to move forward with recommendation to go to the board is applicant number 7, which is Ashley McCleary, number 8, Maria Ramirez Garcia, number 9, Khurshid Rustam. I'm so sorry. Number 11, Sonoris Banup. I'm really sorry. Number 11, if you're on the call, please feel free to tell me how to actually say your name. But I would like to move 7, 8, 9, and 11 on to the board for approval. But then I have a couple applications that I need some assistance with if they happen to be on the call. First one is number 6, Haley Snow. There was an issue with the report on the application for the supervision where we asked whether or not the folks were indeed licensed in the state that they were practicing and providing that supervision. In this case, it happens to be Ohio, which is a licensure state. Ms. Malice did reach out to the applicant and asked her to correct that. And as of this morning, I haven't heard that it has been corrected. So it's more of an admin issue. The folks supervising were indeed licensed. It's just not updated on the form appropriately. So there's no issue with the hours to be counted because the person was indeed the folks supervising were indeed licensed. There was a little bit of confusion going back and forth, I think, between her and board staff that she's not licensed in Ohio because she's not practicing there. But if we could just get that one piece fixed, I'm not sure if Ms. Snow's on the call or not, but we just need that one piece corrected before we can move it on to the board for approval. I don't know if anyone sees her on. Okay. So unfortunately that one, we need to get some just clerical errors fixed up. All right. Moving on to number 10 for Judith Hernandez. I do see case supervisor listed as employment. So I just need to get some clarity around what that role is. And if it's behavior analytic in nature, if you're here in Arizona. Oh, good. Judith, I see that you're on, Ms. Hernandez. So if you would kindly unmute yourself, tell me if you're practicing in the state of Arizona and if you're guess what does case supervisor entail?
Yes, so I am in Arizona. I'm a case supervisor in Arizona. So I work under an LBA and I assist with assessments. I assist with programming, but I am under an LBA at all times. I don't do any more direct work, but I also do family guidance as well under an LBA.
Tell me a little bit more about like how often are you meeting? Do you guys have a supervision contract in place? Tell me a little bit more about that relationship.
Yes, we do have a supervision contract. We meet probably daily. We're scheduled to meet once a week, but we meet daily, even if it's for just a couple minutes or so.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for being on the call and being able to explain that. So with that, then I have no reservations about recommending that one go to the board for approval as well. So thank you, Ms. Hernandez, for coming.
Thank you.
Number 12, Jose Ramon de Jesus Rodriguez. Employment records. This is also just kind of a public service announcement. It happened quite a few times, actually, going through a lot of the applications this time, that sometimes there's not an end date for employment, which indicates to us that you're still currently employed, which is great. But then there were several applications where we did have to ask board staff to reach out to applicants to say, where are you working now? Because there was end dates of October or November of 2024. And so, you know, if unless you went back to school, maybe you were, you know, had a baby, like whatever the case may be, if it says there's an end of employment, where are you working? And so please make sure to tell your friends. The more thorough and complete you can have those records completed, it just saves everyone a bunch of time. So I know that we did reach out and we did hear back that you're currently working as a behavior analyst at Action Behavior Center. So Ms. Rodriguez, if you could unmute yourself, kind of tell me the nature of that work and if you're being supervised by a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Arizona.
Yes. So currently right now, I'd be like the behavior analyst applicant. That's how we have it listed. I just forgot to put the applicant part. And we basically do a lot of family guidance and supporting the families, how to create the programs, also do some assessments as well for any incoming clients. I am supported by a LBA, and a BCBA. We usually have it scheduled, actually have it across two people, which is the clinical director and the BCBA LBA. And we are scheduled at least every week with one of them each. So I get two on them, and then they are assigned as co. So basically what they do is they oversee everything and make sure everything is done correctly. And then with any of that, like I said, I'll probably meet them on the daily just to go over any issues that I see that are like uprising and making sure that, again, they clarify and everything to make sure that they approve of everything. And yeah.
Great. All right. Well, thank you for that clarification. Thank you for being here, as it helps. So with that information that you're being supervised, we have really frequent touch points, and I see no reason not to put your application for approval towards the board.
Thank you.
So thanks for being here. All right. That is my list. We will move on to Ms. Denton, please. You're up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have applicants 13 through 19. And so with this, this includes Lily Flores Flumara, Fallon Longfield, Patricia Cordova, Ali Marill, Yi Hussan Peng, Brooke Altsik, and Carolyn Berry. So I'm just going to go through these. Let me see. One on my clean list that I have no questions about. So with that being said, it is applicant number 17, Yi Hussan Peng. This was a FAIR that was issued to gather more information on the employment gap. The applicant did supply an explanation of unemployed periods of time, as well as supervised periods of time overseen by Arizona licensed behavior analysts. As a result, in my review of the file, including the applicant's education, supervised experience, examination performance, and declarations, I find it to be both administratively and substantively complete. The other applications I'm going to go just in numerical order. So I am so glad that I see you, Dr. Flores Flumara, because you have raised your hand and you are here and I have questions, and this is so serendipitous. It's wonderful. So as I was reviewing your application and looking through this, I noted in the employment section that you have provided behavior analytics services at the TICFA, I hope I pronounced that correctly, center, from July 1st, 2013, until December 31st, 2024. Was it 2013 or 2023? Might have been 2023. 2013 seems like a long time.
2023. And yes, it was not. That was no, my time. No, 2013.
It was 2013?
I got my BCBA in 2010.
Okay, got it. So with this being said, could you explain a little bit about this practice? Because we're now in the process of obtaining a license, but it looks like you were practicing as a BCBA. Was it in the state of Arizona?
Never in the state of Arizona. I've been traveling to California and Chicago, but now mostly it was California. I haven't practiced in Chicago for 2 summers now.
Okay.
So not here.
Okay. My confusion was that when I looked at this, it looked like the TICFA Center was operating in Arizona. Okay, so that does clear up my concern if you have not practiced at all in the state of Arizona during this employment. Then I would move this one to the clean list as well. And with that, the review of the file, including the applicant's education, supervised experience, examination performance, and declarations, I find it to be both administratively and substantively complete. Okay, next, thank you for being here. I appreciate that. Okay, the next applicant is Fallon Longfield. Is this applicant on the line? Hello.
Hi, yes, I am. Hi.
Hello. Okay, as I was looking through this, it appears that you have been employed at SOAR Autism Center as a case supervisor since June of 2024. Are you still employed here?
I am, yeah.
Okay. It looks like you passed your exam on December 6th, 2024. Can you talk to me a little bit about what your employment looks like since December? Same questions that we've had for a couple of other people here. Are you supervised by a licensed behavior analyst? Are you implementing work at the BCBA level? Can you give me some details, please?
Yes. So I am working under an LBA, have been since the June, the same BCBA since then and onward. We have a contract in place. We meet at least twice a week, but our desks are right next to each other. So I talk to her quite often. But we are working together on assessments, programming, family meetings, any kind of behavior management stuff she gives me some guidance for as well.
Okay. You now move to my clean list as well. Thank you for being here. This is just a testament to, you know, one, Tisha has lots of questions, and two, you should show up to these meetings because then we can move things through so much faster.
Okay. Thank you.
Wonderful. The next applicant is applicant number 15, Patricia Cordova. Are you on the line?
Yes.
Hi. Okay. When I was reviewing your application, the questions that I have here come down to the same type of questions that I just had for the previous applicant. It looks like you've been employed at Summit Therapeutic Services and Services. Okay, I'm wondering where they were provided. It looks like California, maybe Arizona. I'm a little bit confused here.
All of my time in the ABA world's been in California.
Okay, no one has been served in Arizona.
No, no.
All right, you may now move to my clean list as well. Thank you for being here.
I'm not going to be there.
All right, we will move to the next applicant, which is Allie Merrill. This is a fair that came to us after the individual had some confusion in their application process about which supervisors provided supervision, what hours. We had concerns because there was a supervisor who had reported that they had provided supervision before they were licensed in Arizona. The applicant did supply the follow-up documentation requested by the board to show who provided what supervision at what time. And so with this being said, I do believe that we can move this forward to the board for potential approval. But before I did this, I didn't just want to put it on the clean list because the concern that came forth here could have been avoided. So one of the things that happened when going through this, and just because this is a lot of people on this call, is there was a final experience verification form with one supervisor signing as the responsible supervisor for the entire supervision experience. However, that supervisor in the state of Arizona was not eligible to be the responsible supervisor because they could not oversee the entire supervision experience because they weren't licensed yet. So with this being said, whenever you are going through And you're determining who signs off on your final experience verification form. Ensure that that person who signed off on that final experience verification form is eligible to do that from the BACB standards, and that they were aware of your entire supervision experience and they were eligible to oversee that experience because they were licensed and certified at the time of that. So just stepping off my soapbox now, I do believe we have the necessary information to move forward with Ms. Merrill's application on the clean list. Dr. Byer, I see you unmuted yourself.
Thank you for that kind of as a public service announcement, but it also, I think it would be a good spot for us committee members to talk about perhaps that we need to amend or undo a motion that we had during our last meeting where we made the motion that we may need to open a complaint against Lauren Blair because the way the documentation was submitted, it looks like she was perhaps practicing without a license. Now with this information resubmitted from Ms. Moreau, it looks like she was not doing supervision without a license based on like the new kind of time frame breakdown. So I wanted to discuss that with fellow committee members before I make a unilateral decision. Dr. Reeds is giving me the confused look, so no.
No, not confused. I was just trying to think about if we've had this before and what, how do we remove a motion from a previous meeting?
Okay.
More procedural thought than anything else.
Okay.
I was not present at the previous meeting, henceforth, I will not be very helpful.
Yeah, that's fine. So I'm just curious if my Dr. Sunhoff and Dr. Reitz, are you still having the same concern as we were last meeting with the new information of how they broke down their, I guess, their supervision timeline in the newer email? We have Lauren now from May 2024 to July of 2024. We're on that verification form. What the supervision start date was, you know, August of 23, which she wasn't, you know, licensed at that point. So I think that that changes my request for a complaint to be investigated, but I don't want to make that decision unilaterally.
Madam Chair, I agree.
Yes. Okay. All righty. But to Ms. Denton's point, you know, she was also the one who did sign that original, our state of Arizona Board of Psychological Examiners supervised work experience. You know, she did sign off that during the entire supervision, she was licensed. So I guess like the time that she was supervising, it does say that she was licensed, but it's problematic when we have that other form that Ms. Denton mentioned, that supervised experience form. All righty. So board staff, looking to you for how do we unding a bell, I guess, for lack of better terminology.
Dr. Byer, committee members, I believe the appropriate step would be for a motion to be made to rescind the previous motion to open a complaint against Ms. Blair.
All right. Do I have a motion?
Move.
All right. Motion's made by Dr. Reitz. Do I have a second?
Second.
It's been seconded by Dr. Stenhoff. Any discussion? All right. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Yes?
Aye.
Cool. Any opposed? All right. The motion passes. All right. Board staff, let me know if we need to fix that up in any way.
Madam Chair, I think you're good, but I will use this opportunity just to provide the second CE code word since we're at the second hour. The second code word is Romania. Romania. Thank you.
Dr. Reitz, you're our coordinator. I know from like the clock starting at 9:30, we've been here for 2 hours, but we also took a 25-minute hiatus. So I'm thinking we might be too early on the code.
A little too early given our breaks.
Okay. So keep that in mind for noon. Just remind us of that code where Dr. Mike, or Mrs. Michael said at that time. Alrighty. Ms. Denton, back to you for the rest of your applicants, if you would please.
Thank you. I am moving on to applicant number 18, which is Brooke Oltzik. I also see that this applicant is present. When I was looking through this, it did appear that the applicant went through a concentrated fieldwork experience, received less than the required 1,500 hours for licensure in the state of Arizona. When I looked at this, I saw that there were an additional 500 hours that were completed between the dates of August 26, 2024 and November 26, 2024, for a total of 500 hours. What this breaks down to is 166 hours per month, which does exceed the BACB's maximum of 130 hours per month that is allowed. It was provided under Supervisor Kelly DeWitt. And so with this being said, there's two pieces to this. One, the question would be, is there additional supervised experience that you received after November? So we don't run into that tricky spot with it going outside of the BACB requirements for that fieldwork experience. And then the next piece would be, is Kelly DeWitt either a relative of you or subordinate to you or employed by you?
No. So yes, she has continued to provide supervision to me since then. So what is today? April 25th. So for however many more months that has been since November, she is not a relative or a subordinate or any of that. She's just my supervisor in my current role.
Okay. So board staff, I'm going to ask you for some help here. When we look at this, we do have in the final verification form, the supervised experience form, that does have the supervisor noting that she is a relative of, subordinate to, or employed by the applicant. And then we have some additional supervised experience that needs to be reported to make sure that it meets the BACB standards. I am moving towards a fair to gather that information. Does that sound like the correct action?
Yes, Ms. Denton, to issue a fair.
Okay, thank you. So the fair would be, I need a correction to the form that was signed off on for the supervised experience to ensure that accurate information is reported in related to question number 11 on that form, and then additional hours beyond November 26th, 2024, to ensure that the 130 hours per month is not exceeded, just so we stay in the BACB standards for what is supervised experience. So I will now move on to applicant number 19. Applicant number 19 is Caroline Berry. So when I looked at this one, is Caroline Berry on the call today? No? Okay. So when I looked at this application, it does appear that only 288 hours count towards Arizona licensure because we have three supervisors who were unlicensed at the time of supervision being provided. So we have 541 hours, 541.42 hours from Jennifer Lords, 226.66 hours from Kristen Goulet, and 288 hours from Melanie Brookshire. These were not Arizona licensed behavior analysts, but supervision did occur in a state that required licensure. So fellow committee members, tell me if I'm off base here, because this is a pretty big one to have to ask someone to complete an additional 1,212 hours of supervised experience.
I mean, it's my recollection, regardless of the number of hours, if it's not under someone who's licensed in your state, you still have to fill the deficit, right? It's not.
I'm really just wanting backup, like police officers. Like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's also needs to be made clear. No one on this committee wants to hold people's application up. Like, I want everyone to be on the clean list every time we come to this meeting. And I think I'm hopefully can speak to my fellow committee members that they want that too. We want folks to get licensed. We want to be licensed as fast as humanly possible. I know there's a lot of frustration around the timelines. I'm, you know, see it on social media a lot, how long it's taking. I will say there are definitely, you know, things that can help us get you through faster. You coming here today or whenever your application is called is, you know, a big part of that, but also filling out the application in its entirety, as I mentioned earlier, like not to leave things blank or not be, you know, fully transparent with your current employment status and where you're working, and responding to board staff as soon as they reach out to you to fix something, even if it seems really silly, that there's a missing column or we have a question answered, you know, in the inverse when it should be a no, when you've circled a yes. Like we have to follow what our statutes say, not what we feel in our heart of hearts of, I'm really sorry, this sucks for you. We'd like to pass you, but we can't. Everyone is held to the same standards, whether you are 10 hours deficient or 1,000, as we are in this case. So unfortunately, Ms. Denton, we have to make decisions that don't make us happy. So I will leave it at that and let any other committee members chime in on that.
I appreciate that. I do feel like I am the Wicked Witch of the West. But with that being said, I do think this application needs to move forward to a fair to request if there has been any additional supervised experience under licensed behavior analysts that could count towards this 1,212 hours that are needed to qualify for Arizona licensure, or if there is any. I mean, board staff communicated with this licensee and found that they were not licensed. So I don't know that we need to ask again, were you licensed? Were these three supervisors licensed? But I think it's a fair just to see if there are any more hours that could count towards this before we make a denial on the application.
Okay. And I think also from a public service announcement standpoint, board staff, if you could remind us and everyone on this call, once they get a fair, how long they have to respond to that. So just knowing that it's not like by next week, you have to show that you have 1,000 hours, right? There's time. So if Ms. Michelson, if you could maybe remind us of that, that would be helpful.
Madam Chair, I don't have the exact time frame since I don't typically handle that. I apologize.
Oh, right. That's right.
I know that time is definitely given. It's not the expectation of, you know, just one day to send in that information. So I can try looking up. I apologize. I don't have that offhand.
Sorry to put you on the spot. I know it's easy. Miss Malice hands applications.
Ms. Mackinnon would know that. She would.
I know she is a encyclopedia of all things, but I know it's when I've seen fairs go out, it's not a couple of days or even a couple of weeks. Like it's an exceptional amount of time to be able to respond to those. So if we could just keep that in mind as well. All right, Ms. Denton, does that finish up your round there?
It does finish up my round until we get to universal recognition.
All righty. If we could finish up the traditional path first with applicants 20 to 25 with Dr. Stenhoff, please.
Yeah, so Andrea Garrick, Hailey Barton, Adelina Cabas, Regina Gonzalez, Bo Escar, and Marlene Salazar. So on my review across all those files, including the applicant's education, supervised experience, examination, performance, and declarations, I found them all to be administratively and substantively complete and recommended that all those applications move forward to the board for approval.
Madam Chair. Can I just celebrate the people who are celebrating on the call with their hands up and the waving? That was beautiful and wonderful. Way to go.
Ms. Cavis, if I mispronounced your name, but I appreciate your enthusiasm as you wait for the board to get that final approval. So
I'm just so excited. Thank you.
You're muted, Madam Chair.
Sorry. Board staff, since there are item six has two subsections, do you want us to do a motion for part A with the regular applications and then B with that universal recognition separate or all together?
Madam Chair, I think you can do them all together once you finish the review.
Okay. Perfect. All right, then Ms. Denton, you are back up with agenda item 6B, Behavior Analyst Applications for Licensure by Universal Recognition.
Thank you. So in reviewing the application for licensure via the pathway of universal recognition, I did see that the applicant, Andrea Kesey, perhaps. She met the requirements. She has established residency in the state of Arizona. She has a license that has been in good standing for over 1 year in another jurisdiction. And I would like to move her to the full board for potential approval and welcome to the state of Arizona.
All right. Very good. Okay. With that, who wants to start a motion?
I haven't recused in a while. From an application, I don't know how to make a motion if I'm
recused. Oh, that's right, if you're accused. Dr. Rates made a face like she Madam really wanted me to have her start. Oh, go ahead, Dr. Stenna. Save your colleague there.
Oh, Dr. Rates is welcome to. Okay. So I'll make a motion as described across the applications that we reviewed or as noted. There it is.
All right, excellent. Dr. Reed, so I have a second.
I will second.
All right. Dr. Stenhoff has made a motion as described, and Dr. Reed has seconded the motion. I like that. We're just going to put that in the script, as described. Any discussion? All right. And I'm not sure if board staff, can Tisha vote since it's a lump sum if she's recused from one, or can she not vote?
Madam Chair, I think that she can vote with that. Yes. The only thing I would request is the motion doesn't clarify which particular applications they directed staff to issue a FAIR for. So I think clarification on that part is needed for those particular applications.
Okay. Because I was taking meticulous notes as we went through these. That was my plea for board staff to help us with those that we've decided to issue a FAIR so we can amend the motion.
I did request a FAIR for Brooke Oltzik. I requested a FAIR for Carolyn Berry. Caroline.
Okay. So 18 and 19. I requested one for Haley Snow, which is applicant number 6.
I requested a FAIR for applicant number 1, Shannon Masamitsu.
Okay. So, and Dr. Senoff had is all clear. So, so Dr. Stenhoff, would you be willing to amend your motion to include as described plus the issuance of a FAIR to applicant number 1, number 6, number 18, and 19?
Yes, I would. So I'll change my motion to as described by by Madam Chair.
All righty. Do we have a second?
I will second.
All right. Motion's been made by Dr. Stenhoff. It has been seconded by Dr. Rates. Any further discussion? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Motion carries. All righty. Before we move on to section 7, if we could do just like a 5-minute comfort break, would that be okay with committee members? We'll come back at, 11:55. All right. Very good. So we are going to move on to agenda item number 7, which is the discussion consideration of possible action regarding requests from Timothy Pease to withdraw his behavior analyst application. So I'm the lead for this one, so I'm going to provide the summary. So let me see here. So Mr. Timothy P submitted an application for behavior analyst licensure on November 26th of 2024. After his application was reviewed, he did send an email to board staff requesting that he withdraw his application. Based on the email exchange between Mr. Pease and board staff, the executive director decided that we should review it as the committee. His request was withdrawn because he was no longer going to be living in Arizona, and he's relocating to Nebraska. He's currently practicing under the supervision of an LBA here in Arizona. Does anyone have any questions for me? No. Okay. I'm not sure if he is present. Is Mr. Pease on the call today? Has anyone seen him in a Zoom room? Okay. I don't see him, and I don't hear anything from our Zoom. So we are unable to ask any questions of Mr. Pease. So board staff, if I'm correct, we can just move in to discussion amongst ourselves on the matter. I had, since it was my review, I'll start with a couple comments and questions if that's okay with everybody else. I do see in the documentation that there is some screenshots of an Excel document that is, I think, the intention to kind of keep track of supervision. But I don't see any of them that have been filled out. I just see like a blank template. So while I am appreciative of that there is a template available, I don't see any documentation that it was utilized. Which for me is problematic. I'm not sure if fellow committee members have thoughts. Oh, did we lose Ms. Denton, or did I come back before I realized that she wasn't back? She's here. Okay, sorry.
I'm shoving my face full of food, and I wanted to be polite, and I'm still here and attending. Thanks for calling me out, Madam Chair.
Anytime. I just was feeling really terrible that I had somehow not realized that you were missing before I launched into agenda item number 7. You can feel free to go off camera and continuing to snack. Nourishment is definitely necessary. But that was a big piece for me looking at that there is potential for documentation, but I don't see any. And there was a self-report that he got around like 6% of his hours supervised, but just as a self-report and not any kind of documentation that would support that. He did say that has 8 supervisee or 8 RBTs that he's supervising. So he's definitely acting as a behavior analyst and is claiming to be under the supervision of a behavior analyst, but it's difficult for me when we don't have documentation surrounding the nature of that supervision in terms of frequency or practice.
Are we at the point where we are discussing what to do? Are we still just having conversations?
Those are my conversation pieces. I don't know if fellow committee
to support
members
your conversation pieces. You have said what I would say. I think we've got some concerns here about some unlicensed practice.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if it's similar to, you know, another agenda item that where he's asking to have his application withdrawn. But now, as a result of that, we are now concerned that there's been practice without appropriate supervision, practicing without a license, without potential sufficient supervisions.
Madam Chair, committee members, I know that he was invited to today's meeting, but I believe that he told Ms. Malice he wouldn't be attending. So the committee may want to consider tabling the matter, considering this new issue that's come to light, and direct staff to invite him to the next meeting, possibly including the issuance of a subpoena to him to appear to answer these questions. So that's one option to consider.
That makes reasonable sense to me. Dr. Stenhoff?
Could you Did you, could, yeah, is there a page that indicates that he might have been practicing without a license? I'm going back through it and I'm not seeing it, but it
page
I might
13
just be missing
of 22.
It. Page 13 of 22. Okay, thank you.
Yes, he says, I currently have a team of 8 RBTs and my caseload is under my CD's LBA. That to me indicates
oh,
that he
you.
Has
yeah.
has a caseload.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
So with that, committee members, would we like to move forward with Ms. Michelson's suggestion that we ask, we table this and ask him to come to our next meeting?
We could also ask him to provide a completed supervision spreadsheet, if available.
Right. And then board staff, we could also request if there is a supervision contract, if oh, no, that was included. I think there is one at the very end, right? There was a...
We do have a contract, yes.
That's right. The contract's there. That's right. But we don't have the logs filled out. Mm-hmm. Okie doke. Ms. Michelson, do we need to put that in a motion? Okay. Dr. Stenhoff, did you have something else prior?
No, I was just thinking through it, but I think the documentation that we're getting will reveal it. Either way, so never mind.
Okay. Would anyone like to offer a motion?
I'll make a motion that we invite Mr. Peace to the next meeting with a subpoena if needed, and also request additional documentation regarding the amount of supervision that has occurred.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All right. Is the motion is made by Dr. Raitz. It's been seconded by Dr. Stenhoff. Is there discussion? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? All right. Motion passes. All right. Board staff, is that sufficient for what you need?
Yes, Madam. All right. Be in contact with the applicant. Thank you.
Okay. Alrighty, we will move on to agenda item number 8. Committee members, if you would be so kind as to go to our drive and pull up the documentation, because it will be, I'll read it, but it would also be help. I don't know. I'm a visual learner, so if you guys want to follow along as I read it to you, we'll go over it. So item number 8 is the discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding suggested revisions to the field supervised fieldwork experience or independent fieldwork verification form, and then a draft supplemental supervised work experience or independent fieldwork verification form. So the first part of this, we were supposed to have it on our last meeting and I skipped it as your Madam Chair, just doing a great job over here, skipping agenda items. So my apologies that we didn't go over it last time. The issue came up on this round of applications as well. When we look at that supervised verification form, all the questions in the very beginning, number 1 through 10, it should all be a yes, and then it switches. The last two questions should be no's, and we see time after time that there are supervisors who are just doing yes through the gamut, and not intentionally, but then we are asking them to please fix this and go back. Just as a refresher for those in the audience who don't have it in front of them, number 11 asks whether or not, you have a relationship with your supervisor. Are you related to them in some way? Are you dating them? Those kind of things. And so the answer should be no, but people are saying yes. And then lastly, we're talking about any kind of training modifications because of the pandemic. So same thing, people are saying yes to that when they, I think in any case we've ever asked, it should have been a no. So our recommendation was that we change the wording on that form so that all the questions should be a yes. So this way people aren't just, tricked by all the questions that came before it. So committee members, I'm going to read what our suggested reframe of that would be for number 11. So I said, did the supervisor conducting the supervised work experience have an independent professional relationship with the applicant with no familial, managerial, or employment connection? So that would be a yes, like that statement is true, as opposed to a no. So that's question number 11, how we've changed it. And number 12, were all modifications to the training program during the pandemic fully documented in the previous sections? If not, please provide a written explanation detailing the changes. So again, that should be a yes. We have about all of it documented prior. So I'll open it up to questions and discussion from fellow committee members, how that language sits with you. Dr. Stenhoff, you're off mute.
I think it works. So yeah, okay. let's go with it, unless somebody else has an objection.
I think the language is beautiful. I do hope that behavior analysts do continue to read the questions. And
I do as well.
Yes. So, but the words are great. They accurately describe what we are seeking.
Perfect. And then Ms. Michelson, I know it's one agenda item, but it's two separate forms. Should we do two separate motions?
Madam Chair, I believe you can address this all in one motion.
Okay. All right. So before we move on to motion, I'll go to the second piece. Dr. Stenhoff was kind enough to work with me. And it was actually good suggestions from Ms. Pakinon, who's not here, to work on that supplemental supervised hours in terms of making that a standardized process. So opposed when we're sending out a fair, like what exactly do we want to see? So we came to the conclusion that it should very much look like that supervised fieldwork experience so that it's in alignment. It will say supplemental in front of it. So that is, the indication that it's not the original. So committee members, I'm looking on page 4 now of 9. And so there are 3 questions at the bottom. Number 11 and 12 are the same. So we have that wording be the affirmative, right? You should say that you have an independent professional relationship. You should say yes to all the modification, during the pandemic. But then we added number 13, and it says, did the experience consist of no fewer than 20 hours and no more than 130 hours, including time spent in supervision each month? So we're hoping that will kind of catch any time that we'd be out of compliance with the BACB would allow. And then if not, please provide documentation that reflects hours required by month for each month. So that piece is there. And actually, as I'm reading this board staff, I do see the yes and no are missing from those two column pieces. So if we can make that edit, that would be helpful. Dr. Waits.
I apologize, but I wanted to go back to number 11 quickly.
Sure.
So the last section, just the employment connection, will that lead to confusion? Because I think the question's inherent is I am not an employee of you if I am providing your supervision. And I fear that no employment connection may provide confusion for folks. So wordsmith that a little bit?
Employer connection? That would also still be confusing.
Right, if you're working for like the same agency. I see your point, Dr. Rates, and I'm in agreement to make a modification. I just don't have one immediately of what I'd swap, but I'm happy for someone else to come up with that.
Yeah, I'm not sure on the fly, but I can think about it. Maybe we just need to separate out familial and then the managerial and employment.
Okay.
So that becomes more clear. So with no familial connection or an employee of the applicant.
What if we did parentheses to explain the employment connection and said, well, it's not an employer or something to this effect, was not.
Again, parentheticals. So after employment connection, parentheticals. The applicant is not the employer of the supervisor.
Yeah.
Can we do that, board staff?
Or the reverse, supervisor's not the employee, but either way. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Sorry. That's my recommendation. Sorry. It took me a minute, but to think through.
No, that's okay. No, I think those are good catches. See, Dr. Rape is reading it, Ms. Denton.
Yes, she is.
Let's see. I'm gonna copy the sentence and put it. I need to just like reword it for myself. So if we want to make that motion, then I can actually read it how we want it to be read. But I need to write it because that's how my brain works. So do we want it to say, did the supervisor conducting the supervised work experience have an independent professional relationship with the applicant with no familiar managerial or employment connection, parentheticals, meaning that the supervisee is not the employer of the supervisor? Is that what we're looking for? Or do we want something different?
Maybe use applicant, because we use the applicant throughout okay. as the way that we not address true. Them. Okay.
Yep.
And then you don't have like, wait, supervisee, which
yep. Okay. So did the supervisor conducting the supervised work experience have an independent professional relationship with the applicant, meaning no familiar managerial or employment connection, meaning that the applicant is not the employer of the supervisor? Survey says. Cool.
I'd like to get stakeholder responses. Like, we've got people on the call here. Does this make sense? Shaking heads.
Can thumb up some emojis. People who don't want to come off camera, do a thumbs up or something, anything.
Oh, we made some people leave. They like left.
Oh, we got a few thumbs up. All right.
That.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. I mean, again, like this, as Ms. Den pointed out, I do hope that folks, when they're signing their name to something, are absolutely reading things and not blindly signing. However, I also think that the more standard approach we can take to questions just from like a testing like perspective, like people kind of just get in a, I think, the hamster wheel of see for everything. So if we can help folks maybe read that a bit more easily, then I hope that that's okay. All right, so Dr. Raitt, so we'd want that wording on number 11 to be the same in the original form and the supplemental, I'm assuming, right?
Yes.
So if board staff, if we can make that change to both spaces. And then again, number 13, at least on my copy, there's not a yes or a no in the form. So if we can just make that minor edit. But are we okay with the, you know, that supplemental form is pretty much identical to the original. Again, trying to, just for those on the call, like the real call to action for this was to make sure that every applicant is, you know, is getting, you know, a standard approach to review. So when we look at applications, we're always looking for, you know, we want to make sure that we are reviewing them with the same factors in mind. And so if for whatever reason we are deficient in the hours that, you know, we did intensive practicum or we did half of them with a licensed behavior analyst and I need to make them up, what does documentation look like to say I have, you know, I had 700 that are approved. How do I make up those last 800? We want that process to be the same for everyone. We'd like this to be fair. Everyone gets a fair shake. Everyone gets the same documentation that's submitted. So that was kind of the real you know, kind of mission behind this. And so again, Ms. Packernan had a great point that should look very much like the original documentation that we're asking everyone to submit. So that was kind of the method to the madness here with that additional question about the hour accrual, because we had to be in alignment with the BACB. So committee members, are we okay with that supplemental? Cool. Dr. Raitt, do you have a comment?
I mean, this is so silly, but I'll just say it in case. On the first page for question 2 and 3A through D, we just need to make the box a little bigger.
Oh, yes. Because
it shows the yes. Sorry.
Yes.
We have lots of things to say, so I'm so glad you said it.
Yeah, sorry. Just a little formatting. No, that's good. We want to have things that look nice and professional. So, yep. Edit to be made. All righty.
Thank you. Otherwise, it's lovely. And thank you for all of the hard work. I do not mean to not be grateful for it. Thank you.
Oh, this was, I think, probably the fastest meeting I think that I've had in terms of outside committee work. I think Dr. Senapkin and Detz were on the call for like less than half an hour. It was magical. So All righty. So with that, do you have a motion for agenda item number 8?
Go ahead, Dr. Senhoff.
Oh.
Dr. You looked excited. I'm going to let you take it.
Okay, so I make a motion that we make or add these forms and adjust the existing forms to what's suggested in the yellow highlights in this packet. So,
all right,
so
second.
With the noted changes by the committee members. So,
okay, Ms.
Denton,
now the second.
I will second that.
All right. The motion has been made by Dr. Senhoff. It has been seconded by Ms. Denton. Any further discussion? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? All right. Motion carries. Very good. All right. We will move on to agenda item number 9, which is discussion consideration, possible action regarding recent updates from the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, the BACB. Ms. Michelson, would you please provide an overview of the matter for the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair, this should be pretty quick. The update that was issued earlier this month does indicate that there are now 36 states with some forms of licensure for behavior analysts. The update did also discuss a series of upcoming virtual events for regulators. They actually had a presentation the other day, which Ms. Pakanon and I attended. I believe I saw Dr. Stenhoff there as well. It provided a refresher of their process for reviewing complaints, along with the discussion of data that they've compiled relative to top ethical violations for BCBA. So it was a good refresher for me in particular to review. They discussed some of the top violations were focused around integrity, complying with legal and professional requirements, and also discussion about transition and discharge planning as well. So Dr. Stenhoff may have some comments to share about that presentation. The only other thing I recall that the update noted was that the BACB hosted their regulators luncheon, I believe last month during the annual APBA conference. I don't know if Dr. Wraiths was there for that, so she may have some comments to share with the committee, but that's all I have for now. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Dr. Senhoff.
Yeah, the only thing I'd note is they did go over the top code violations. And so for those BCBAs that are still on the call, I think those would be important to take a look at as well. Not saying that anybody on here is going to violate, but I think it'd be a good refresher for those common pitfalls that BCBAs face that come up before the certification board.
He's an ethics CEU. Why? Totally relevant.
Are they posting that in a newsletter of like what the top ones were? Is that available somewhere for the public to review?
Ms. Michelson, do you remember?
They did not indicate so. I'm not sure if it's something they would publish publicly, as this was for regulators specifically. But if we do,
Madam Chair, a few years ago they did issue a white paper. So just looking historically at what the BACB has done, that might be something that they follow suit with. I can't speak on behalf of the BACB, but that's what they did in the past.
Okay.
Only time will tell, Madam Chair.
Oh, goody, goody gumdrops. Thank you, Dr. Stenhoff. So, I mean, if those don't become publicly available, I guess just review your ethics code, friends, on the call. and let that be your guiding compass. Dr. Rates, did you want to add something?
Oh, I was just going to note, we did attend the regulators luncheon at APBA. I believe we talked about it in our last meeting, unless I'm mistaken. Okay.
We did. Alrighty. Any questions for Ms. Michelson? No? Okay. I don't think we need a motion. All right. We'll move on to agenda item number 10. And that is, do any members have any items they wish to include on future meeting agenda? I have one, and then I'll pass it on to my fellow committee members. It came up quite a few on these applications for me anyways. with the updated employment for applicants when they are submitting. I know there's a delay between, you know, where we apply and then when we actually come here. And that's not so much of a rub for me, but when folks are saying, a lot of times I've seen applications, they are saying that their employment kind of has ended once they become a BCBA, like they've passed their certification. But when we are asking for more information, it's coming back that they do still indeed work at that place of employment, but they've moved into a new role, which is often as a behavior analyst. And if that's the case, then we need to be supervised. So I would like there to be some kind of way to account for in the application that we are maybe clearer with that request or expectation that we are asking there not to be an end date of employment. Like your employment should be open. You're working somewhere still right now at the time of your application, with the exception that perhaps you have moved. Maybe you're in the military and you got deployed. You took time off to have a kiddo, go back to school, things of that nature. And I know the application doesn't allow for that right now. So one suggestion would be to clarify like what we're asking for. You need to be currently employed. And if you're not for some reason employed anywhere, that we have a way to communicate that. So we're not asking board staff to email applicants, hey, it says you don't have a job since October 2024. Where are you now? Because that is a huge burden on board staff. It is also a burden of us reviewing applications, and then it makes these meetings much longer when we need to ask staff to always or ask applicants to, you know, answer those questions kind of in front of everybody else. So those are my thoughts. Ms. Denton.
Thoughts.
Pardon?
I have thoughts.
Oh, good. Bring your thoughts.
I believe Ms. Malice isn't here right now, but I believe there's already an email that goes out to say you're on the agenda. You're coming. Like, we recommend that you come to this meeting. It behooves you.
Yes.
So if we're already sending out an email and we've got a template that says the committee may have questions for you surrounding this stuff, let me be specific. The dates of your employment past the application date that you submitted. If you have been employed as a BCBA, who your licensed behavior analyst has been, what is the duration or frequency of the supervision that you've received from your licensed behavior analyst? And say, please submit this by this day. If you have updates for this, it will help expedite the process of your application review. Then if we've got a template, you know, and it goes out, then at this point, it's still the same email, still the same response effort on board staff. What about that?
Go ahead, Jennifer. Sorry, Ms. Michelson.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for that comment, Ms. Denton. I do think that we are getting into a discussion about this item.
And it needs to go on the agenda.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It needs to go on the agenda. So, my apologies.
We'll put it on a subsequent agenda.
We were very excited.
Ms. Galvin is not here, but I think she would probably advise the committee to save discussion about strategies for the future agenda item. Thank you.
Yes, thanks for that, Ms. Michelson. Do we need to make a motion to add it to the agenda?
No.
For next time? Okay. Alrighty.
Inquire if there are any other items that other committee members would like to add.
Additional items. Coolio. All right. Well, let's see. I know last time we talked, Dr. Reitz, about giving half credits. I wasn't sure if that's something you had thought of as a ACE coordinator.
Yes, we can do that if we have a 25-minute, at least a 25-minute. From an hour, right. We can go to a 0.5.
Okay. So Ms. Michelson, could you give us a code word for half an hour, another half an hour for folks who have been here?
Yes. The last code word is Slovenia. Slovenia.
Can you reveal the theme?
Yes. These are three countries that I will be going to summer on vacation.
How was I supposed to know that? That's not fair.
Sorry.
Congratulations, though. That sounds like a blast. Maybe you can invite me.
Very fun.
All right, cool. With that being said, we will move on to agenda item number 11, which is adjournment. The time is now 12:25 p.m., and I exercise my prerogative as a chair to adjourn this meeting. So thanks for all of you in attendance for coming. Congratulations for those of you who had their application reviewed, and it's moving on to the board. So happy Friday.
Thanks, everybody. Yay.